رحلة تنقضي قوس قزح من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر من مخيم إلى بلد مهجر.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Palestine, a weekly 45-minute segment of news from Palestine and discussion of issues relevant to the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military occupation and colonization of their homeland. This program presents news and analysis from the Palestinian perspective, the perspective we do not get from the mainstream media. We ask our listeners, were you involved last week in the Palestine-Israel peace movement and the Palestinian struggle for freedom from Israel's savage military occupation and colonization of their homeland? Did you speak out on the atrocities Israel is committing every day in Gaza and the West Bank? If not, why not? Palestine was never in greater need of your help. We cannot overemphasize to our listeners that the best thing you can do is to go to Palestine and experience the situation on the ground for yourselves. There is nothing that can bring home to you the realities on the ground in Palestine than to go there and see for yourselves. Never mind what you hear out of the filter of the mainstream media, or for that matter, what you may hear in this program. The best way to discover the truth is to go and see for yourselves. Nothing that you may have read or heard could prepare you for what you will see. It is Sunday, September 28, 2008. We begin with two event announcements, followed by a brief summary of news highlights. The second Boston Palestine Film Festival, commemorating the 60th anniversary of the Nakba, will open this coming Saturday, October 4th, and run until October 12th. The festival will feature 55 films, documentaries, and dramatic features by international filmmakers commemorating the 60th anniversary of the Nakba and the dispossession and expulsion from Palestine of 800,000 Palestinians. The films and documentaries will be shown at the Boston Museum of Fine Arts, the Harvard Film Archive, the Coolidge Theater, Harvard University, Boston College, and Northeastern University. Discussions with directors will follow most screenings. An opening reception will be held following the opening film, Slingshot Hip Hop. Please note that the venue for the opening reception, which was originally the Museum of Fine Arts, has been changed. The opening reception will now be held on Friday, October 3rd, that's this coming Friday, at the Expressions of Nakba event at Harvard University's Knaffel Building, located at 1737 Cambridge Street in Cambridge. As part of the festival, a concert by the acclaimed violin and oud virtuoso Simon Shaheen will be held a week later at the Museum of Fine Arts on Friday, October 10th, at 7:30 p.m. For film information, tickets, and to make much-needed donations, please visit the festival website at Boston Palestine Film Fest, that's all one word, bostonpalestinefilmfest.org. All donations are tax-deductible. The Boston chapter of the Palestine Children's Relief Fund will be holding a fundraising dinner at 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 25th, at the Palestinian Center for Peace, located at 41 Quint Avenue in Alston. Following is a brief summary of news highlights. The second Free Gaza boat trip, which was due to sail last Thursday to break the siege of Gaza once again, was delayed at the last minute. This delay is believed to have been caused by external pressure on the boat owner. No alternative sailing date was announced. To learn more about this voyage and give much-needed donations, please visit the website freegaza.org or call this number in the United States, area code 510-232-2500. On September 10th, an Israeli military gunboat rammed an unarmed Palestinian fishing vessel at high speed. The gunboat smashed through the upper hull of the fishing boat, careened over the top, and landed on the other side, causing extensive damage to the hull and deck. All the equipment on deck and the canopy above the deck were also severely damaged. The crew happened to be in the cabin, or at the fore at the time. Had they been on deck, they would have had little chance of surviving. Using a megaphone, the Israeli military aboard the gunboat issued this threat. Quote, "When the internationals leave Gaza, you will all be made to pay." Unquote. Israeli soldiers abducted two Palestinians from eastern Khan Yunis on Friday. The two Gazans were taken to an undisclosed location. The Israeli forces also broke the ceasefire agreement again by invading the area with a number of armored vehicles. The soldiers reportedly came as close as 100 meters east of the Khazaha area of Khan Yunis before turning back. Israel Prize winner, historian, and Hebrew University professor Ze'ev Sternhell was slightly wounded after a small pipe bomb at the entrance of his home in Jerusalem exploded overnight Wednesday, and he was taken to a Jerusalem hospital early Thursday. Police speculated that the attack against Sternhell was ideologically motivated and was likely carried out by extreme right-wing activists. Pamphlets calling for the physical assault of left-wing activists were found near the professor's home on Wednesday night, reportedly promising a reward of 1,100,000 new Israeli shekels to anyone who murdered someone associated with a Peace Now organization. Israeli Prime Minister Olmert submitted his resignation last Sunday, September 21st. Prime Minister-elect Tzipi Livni, who narrowly won the leadership of the Kadima Party, has 6 weeks to form a new coalition government. If she does not succeed, Israeli President Shimon Peres could ask the runner-up for the leadership of the Kadima Party to form the new government, or the matter could end in general elections in January of 2009, until when Mr. Olmert will remain as Prime Minister. In our own backyard, the Somerville Divestment Project has succeeded in promoting a public policy question to appear on the November ballot in Somerville and Cambridge. The question to be voted on is the following. Quote, "Shall the state representative from this district be instructed to vote in favor of a non-binding resolution calling on the federal government to support the right of all people, including non-Jewish Palestinian citizens of Israel, to live free from laws that give more rights to people of one religion than another?" Opposition was voiced to having the question appear on the ballot because it was claimed the question posed by the supporters was in fact two questions in one. In the alternative, the opposition suggested that the proposed question be split into two questions. The Massachusetts district attorney, however, expressed her disagreement with the opposition's argument in a letter to the Secretary of the Commonwealth. The Somerville Divestment Project's question, therefore, will appear as proposed on the November ballot in Somerville and Cambridge. In news from the ground in Palestine, 10 demonstrators were injured and 10 other youths were arrested near the West Bank city of Ne'alin while they were protesting against the building of an Israeli toxic waste dump on their land. A spokesperson for the protest group, who had been severely injured at another demonstration, was briefing European Union representative for political affairs, Mr. Jérôme Bélion-Jourdan, when the Israeli soldiers opened fire. One representative of the Israeli border police tried to defend the soldiers' actions by claiming that they were, quote, "preventing the disruption of law and order and unlawful entry into a closed military zone," unquote. But the European diplomat rejected the claim, adding that there was no sign indicating that this was a closed military zone. And as we reported last week, the Israeli government has approved a permit allowing an Israeli contractor to construct another dump for Israeli garbage on historically rich and archaeologically valuable Palestinian land in Nablus, near a recent major archaeological discovery dating from the Roman era some 2,000 years ago, near the site where the city of Nablus was founded. Nablus is the largest Palestinian city in the West Bank with a population of more than 250,000 people. Israel is imposing tight restrictions against Palestinians wishing to pray at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Hundreds of Palestinians have been turned away. This past Friday, which is the last Friday of Ramadan, is traditionally the most important, as it comes before the Eid al-Fitr, the end of Ramadan celebration. In Jerusalem, at the close of the month of fasting, many religious festivals are held, markets are crowded with shoppers buying goods and gifts for family members, and members of the Muslim community coming together in recognition of a successful month of fasting and reflection. While restrictions are tight for West Bank Palestinians wishing to worship at the Holy Al-Aqsa Mosque, residents of the Gaza Strip are entirely prohibited from entering Jerusalem. This year is the 10th consecutive year that the Palestinians of Gaza have been unable to do their pilgrimage to Jerusalem. A large Hamas delegation will head to Cairo on October 8th to take part in Palestinian reconciliation talks and discuss the possibility of forming a unity government. The term in office of Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas ends in January 2009. More than 70% of respondents to an unscientific internet poll conducted by the Palestinian Ma'an news agency were in favor of having Mr. Abbas resign at the end of his term in January 2009. No formal election arrangements have been announced. Our topic today is the Palestinian leadership in disarray, the ongoing interfactional power struggle which is fueling attacks against public institutions, schools and orphanages, the destruction or dismemberment of charitable organizations providing much-needed social services, and the arrest by one faction of members of other factions. Such actions cause untold harm to the population. They destroy the social fabric, cause severe breakdowns in social stability and public security, not to mention exacerbate the acute water shortages now being suffered in the West Bank and Gaza. What is behind the self-destructive behavior? Here to help us understand what to make of all this, we are very pleased to welcome independent Palestinian political and cultural analyst Mr. Omar Barghouti. Mr. Barghouti is also a human rights activist involved in civil struggle to end oppression and conflict in Palestine, Israel, and an organizer of the campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. You can read some of his writings at his website, www.pacbi.org, at Counterpunch, and at Electronic Intifada. Mr. Barghouti holds a master's degree in electrical engineering from Columbia University and is currently a doctoral student of philosophy at Tel Aviv University. He contributed to the book The New Intifada, Resisting Israel's Apartheid, Verso Books, in 2001. Mr. Barghouti advocates for an ethical vision of a single secular democratic state in historical Palestine. He joins us now by telephone from Palestine. Good afternoon, Mr. Omar Barghouti.
Good afternoon, Sharif.
Welcome to This Week in Palestine.
Thank you.
Please help us understand what is going on.
I kind of do not accept that self-inflicted part that you mentioned in your introduction. I do not consider the actions of the government, the Palestinian government in Ramallah, as an infliction, a self-infliction, as if it's a Palestinian act against Palestinians. It is a Palestinian tool that's doing this, but it's not much of a Palestinian act. This government has no mandate from the Palestinian Legislative Council, and therefore it's illegal. And I'm talking about the Fayyad government in Ramallah. It does not have a mandate to rule, so it's an illegal government. It's an undemocratically elected government. It's installed by the Americans and the Israelis, much more than chosen by the Palestinian people. And therefore, its actions cannot be really considered as representing any Palestinian faction. There's a kind of a misunderstanding rampant in the mainstream media describing the split in between Ramallah and Gaza as a split between Fatah and Hamas. While there are certainly problems between the two major political factions, Fatah and Hamas, the conflict is mainly between an elected Palestinian government and an unelected Palestinian government that's been installed by the Americans. So this is not much of a Fatah government, actually. It does not have one senior Fatah member in this government. It's mainly bureaucrats and technocrats accepted to the American side and mostly to the Israeli side as well.
Well, I guess both governments are illegal in the sense that the president in law has the authority to declare emergency powers and name his own cabinet for about 30 days, as I understand it. But then after that, it has become illegal, as you say.
That's true. That's true. The Hamas government has been disbanded by the president of the PA, so it has become illegal as well. I did not say that it was legal. I said it's democratically elected. Yeah. Vis-a-vis a government in Ramallah that's not elected at all. So in Gaza, we have a democratically elected government that's been disbanded, so it's now illegal. And in Ramallah, it's illegal de facto because it was not even accepted by the PLC.
Why are no arrangements now being made for elections this coming January, when Abbas's term in office ends?
It's still rumored. We don't have solid facts, but it's rumored that Abbas, upon American prodding, is planning to stay on after his democratic term ends.
For another year?
For another year or more. Who knows? It depends on what Washington sees fit. The point is, his term will end, and therefore, certainly, according to the Palestinian laws, a new presidential election has to be called for. If he continues on without a mandate, that will even cause more strife among the Palestinians. Nobody will recognize his leadership, his presidency, except for a small faction that is mainly representing American interests in Palestine, not so much Palestinian interests. So that's opening the door to even more conflict and disasters.
You heard earlier about the internet poll that I mentioned earlier, showing that more than 70% of the people want to see Mr. Abbas resign in January. That certainly shows that people are disappointed with Mr. Abbas's performance. Is there any leader whom Palestinians trust and who can unify the nation under a coalition government of national unity? Could, for example, Marwan Barghouti do that if he were released from his imprisonment in Israel? Could others, such as Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, Dr. Alam Jarrah, or Dr. Hanan Ashrawi, is there anyone whom the Palestinians trust enough to form a unity government?
I don't know if there's any consensus among Palestinians, and let's qualify this, the Palestinians, because the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza who would vote for such a government are a minority of the, among Palestinians, the majority being refugees in exile. So this minority of Palestinians, which was redefined in Oslo as the Palestinians, will vote. We do not even have a consensus among the Palestinians in the occupied territories. Marwan Barghouti, who was mentioned, is the closest to a consensus figure. I'm sure parts of Hamas will accept him because he still carries on the national rights program rather than the American/Israeli program, accommodating ourselves to Israeli demands and American demands. So Marwan Barghouti has the best chance, probably, among the names you mentioned. But I can't think of any other names that may get anything close to a consensus.
There have also been recent reports indicating that Mr. Abbas is privately compromising on the right of return. Is there any truth to that?
Absolutely. This is absolutely true. He spoke about that openly in Al Arabiya TV channel, the Saudi channel, and he repeated the same position in an interview in Haaretz. Until now, we have not heard any denials from Mr. Abbas about his reported statements, so we take them as facts. He did actually start compromising on the right of return years ago. This is not new. He always represented the right wing of Fatah that was always ready to compromise the right of return in return for Israeli concessions on land in the occupied territory and in Jerusalem. Now what he's trying to do is to put this as an official Palestinian position. It was always behind closed doors, under the table. Now he's the president of the PA, and he sees this as giving him a chance to present it as an official Palestinian concession to the Israelis, that we will give up the right of return, meaning the right of refugees to return to where they were exiled from, to where they were ethnically cleansed from, which is current Israel. Saying that Palestinian refugees have a right to return to the West Bank and Gaza is playing with words. This is not the right of return. You do not decide for a refugee where he or she should return. According to international law, every refugee displaced from his or her land, his or her home, has an inalienable right to go back to that home, to that land. No one can take that right away from you, not even your political representative, your president, your parliament representative. No one can negotiate this away. Only you have the right to negotiate it away, to give it up. So every Palestinian refugee, according to international law, has a right to return. Abbas has absolutely no right and no mandate to give up this this right. That's at a moral, legal level. At a political level, it's sheer stupidity to think that the Israeli occupation will give up anything in return for this right. Yes, certainly the Israelis want this more than anything else. To them, the right of return reminds Israel that it's built on illegal grounds, that Israel is built on ethnic cleansing, and it cannot continue to exist on ethnic cleansing. It has to allow the refugees that it exiled, that it ethnically cleansed, to return in order for it to live in peace. Yes, the Israelis want this, but they are not ready to give up anything in return for that. Proof of that is that Abbas has given up the right of return years ago, not publicly, secretly, but now it's public. And what did he get in return? More colonization of the occupied territories, more settlers, close to 500,000 settlers now in the occupied territories, more Judaization of Jerusalem. Jerusalem is turning very fast into a Jewish-only town, and so on and so forth. So we're not even getting concessions on roadblocks. The quartet, the U.S., the U.N., everybody has called on Israel to cut down the number of roadblocks that they were not associated with security, that they were just to humiliate the Palestinians and to cut up the West Bank into Bantustan. But Israel has not even given up on that, let alone concessions in Jerusalem or on territory that it occupies. So at a pure pragmatic political level, Abbas's concessions have led to naught. Nothing came out of them.
It seems to me, having looking back in history, is that the Palestinians have been forced to give up every negotiating point that they had ahead of any negotiation, so that they have nothing left. Every card they had to negotiate. Recognition of Israel after Israel recognizes Palestinians certainly was a reasonable thing to do, yet they were forced to recognize Israel, even though Israel does not recognize the Palestinians' rights. Everything that they had which was worth negotiating to get something in return, they've been asked to give up. And Mr. Abbas has given up the biggest one. Certainly he can't be very popular in Palestine at this point. I mean, he was warned during the summit in Sharm el-Sheikh before, way back. Recently letters have been written by the Right of Return Coalition, by the director of the Arawad Center in Bethlehem, and by many others, not to give up that right. And yet he insists on doing that. How can he possibly remain in power?
He does not depend on Palestinian popular votes to stay in power. Yes, he was voted into office, but now he does not have anything close to a majority of votes. Come January 2009, he will end his term, and he has no chance to get reelected if he decides to run for office. Anything that would keep him in power would be Americans. I mean, he would come on top of an American-Israeli tank, so to speak, figuratively, not by Palestinian votes. He's not just unpopular. Among many Palestinians, he's despised because he's giving up the most important right the Palestinians have always struggled for, the right of return for refugees. And this is the core of the question of Palestine. It's not the occupation. The occupation is the most painful one now. It's the most urgent one now. But it's not the main issue. It's not the main injustice that the Zionists have inflicted upon the indigenous people of Palestine. The ethnic cleansing was the most momentous, the most significant injustice inflicted by the Zionists on us. And that right to return is the most important, the most sacred, I would say, right that the Palestinians have always had a consensus on. So Abbas does not have any popularity whatsoever at this point.
What he has is money, and the way he's using the money is that he's only paying the people who are working in Fatah-connected institutions, And those who don't are not paid. And so it's as if he had a policy of you either support me or you starve. And that's the only support he gets.
Yeah, this is the American democratic model tried in Egypt, Jordan, and others. This is what Americans call democracy. You know, they have a dictator who's a complete puppet to the American interests and follows the orders from Washington, and then they consider him by definition democratic. Since he's following orders from democratic Washington, then he's democratic. It doesn't matter if he's elected, doesn't matter if he's doing what his people are asking him to do, or if he has a majority support. That doesn't matter to the American administration. What matters is following orders from Washington. So if that's the criterion for being, quote, democratic, Abbas is certainly democratic par excellence.
This is a classical example of the ruling class of a country selling out the people of their country to an imperial force. It happened in Egypt when I was growing up. I certainly saw it there. The ruling class were cavorting with the British to get influence and gather some wealth, and the people were of no consequence at all. It is a classical model that occurred in India. It occurred certainly in Egypt. It's occurring now in Palestine. It seems to me that one is tempted to say that because it's easy to say it, but very, very difficult to make it happen. And that is that Palestinians need. Need to get their voice heard. And it seems to me that until they give up this idea that their future is completely determined by outside powers, and that they take matters in their own hands and say, we are going to be the ones who will dictate what our future will be, somehow establish a unity government which makes the officials and the leaders of Palestine accountable to the people, which is a very, very difficult thing to do. But it seems to be the only way out is to reclaim one's authority, one's rights, reclaim them unilaterally and say, you will not govern us unless you are accountable to us. How can that come about, Omar? I'm just hunting for ideas here at this point.
Well, I think disbanding the Palestinian Authority would be the most the wisest thing for Palestinians to do. The Palestinian Authority is a subcontractor for the occupation. If anybody had any doubt in the last years, now it's 100% clear. With the security cooperation between the Palestinian security apparatus and the Israeli army, occupation army, and the Shabak and so on, with the coordination as far as economics are concerned, and so on and so forth, there's so many examples of the Palestinian Authority serving mainly and mostly Israeli interests in maintaining the occupation with Palestinian tools. I've always defined the Palestinian Authority as a subcontractor for the occupation since Oslo in 1993. Now many more analysts have come to that conclusion as well. Given that Abbas himself and Abu Qrayah and others, main leaders within the PA, have openly threatened the Americans and the Israelis that unless they give them something on the table, negotiations table, they will disband the PA. What does that entail? What does that imply? If I'm threatening you that, you know, unless you give me this, I will destroy your toy, I will destroy your tool, that means I'm admitting that it is your tool, it's not mine. Mm. For Abbas to threaten Olmert that he would disband the PA, he's telling him that the PA is yours, not mine.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only logical conclusion anybody can come up with. Mm-hmm. So I've always argued for an orderly, gradual transfer of authority, so to speak, from the PA to the PLO, but not the current PLO, which is a skeleton of itself, to a new rejuvenated PLO, which has mass movements electing leaders from the grassroots upwards and including all Palestinian political parties, including Hamas. Without this, without moving Palestinian voice, the main Palestinian authority, the main Palestinian political leadership outside from under the Israeli army boot to somewhere in exile, where it can again reclaim the Palestinian voice, as you mentioned, reclaim representation of all Palestinians, not just the minority in the West Bank and Gaza, there's no chance of achieving any of our rights. So I think disbanding the PA in an orderly, gradual manner, because it's a legally very complex operation. It's not something that can be done overnight. The PA is recognized by the international community as a representative of the, as the representative of the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza. It cannot be disbanded overnight, but it has to be done. There's no escape from disbanding Israel's subcontractor.
And then the idea would be to have the international community accept the PLO once again as the only representative.
The PLO never lost its status as the sole legitimate representative of the Palestinian people. It still has that. Mm-hmm. Everybody recognizes the PLO, and if people forget, before Oslo, the PLO had more diplomatic missions around the world than Israel did. It had more recognition from states around the world than Israel had.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't that we were in a weaker position than Israel, and with the PA we became stronger. Quite the contrary. Establishing the PA opened the road to Israel's recognition and reconciliation with the rest of the world, especially Africa, Asia, and Latin America, including Islamic countries, including Arab countries. The PA opened the door to Israel to be recuperated into the international community when it was considered a pariah before then.
And that would be done through the PLC?
Not the PLC. The PLC is one of the organs of the PA.
Yes.
It represents the Palestinians and the occupied West Bank and Gaza. But can it disband, you mean, can it call for disbanding? No, the PLO would. The PLO established the PA. The PLO can disband the PA. It's the only power that can do that. The problem is the current PLO structures, bureaucratic, unelected structures, are so rusty that they have absolutely no mandate from anywhere. Nobody trusts the current structures of the PLO. There hasn't been an election in many, many, many years. So, but this can be reworked from the bottom up. The PLO has, on paper at least, mass movements, women's, workers, students' movements, and so on, that always were the core of the PLO. If these organizations everywhere in the world were to carry on their elections and elect their representatives and onwards until you reach the executive committee of the PLO, then we'll have a really representative Palestinian leadership that can speak on behalf of all Palestinians and gradually disband the PA.
Does Mr. Abbas have a role to play? I mean, he plays a role in the PLO, doesn't he?
He's the chief of the PLO. He's the
yes.
Yeah, he plays the main role in the PLO. That's why I'm saying the current structures are useless.
Mm.
We haven't had elections for the PLO in many, many years. So, yes, he carries the number one position in the PLO, but it's meaningless now because it doesn't represent anybody.
Mm.
For the PLO to reclaim its so legitimate representation of the Palestinians, it needs a mandate from the grassroots up.
Mm-hmm.
It needs an independent mandate, not controlled or dictated by the Americans or the Israelis.
How can that movement be created at this point?
The Palestinian political parties in Cairo last year reached an agreement to rejuvenate the PLO,
uh-huh.
To rehabilitate the PLO,
uh-huh.
With Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Mubadara, and all the other groups that were not part of the PLO, to join the PLO and to have general elections among Palestinians everywhere, not just in the West Bank and Gaza, but we're talking about exile.
Absolutely, yes.
That is the way. So we're not reinventing the wheel. Palestinian political parties already achieved a major agreement in Cairo that should be implemented. The problem is, under American and Israeli pressure, a major part of the Fatah leadership reneged on their promises to carry on with this rehabilitation program for the PLO.
What role can the Arab League play?
Oh, tough question. Not much. I mean, the Arab League is just a representative of the Arab regimes, none of which has any mandate, any democratic mandate. We have a bunch of dictators that are unelected, mainly installed by the Americans, the British, or others, and do not represent any major sector in their society, in their among their people. So they're really unelected. They represent imperial powers, and they have absolutely no representation for their own people. So the Arab League is just an aggregate of these dictatorships. It has a minor role to play, just it's still the Arab legitimacy, but if we judge by history, if the Palestinians take a very strong position towards something, the Arab League usually follows suit because of the enormous status the Palestinian question has among the Arab masses, among the Arab peoples. Mm-hmm. Until now, no Arab leader dares to go openly against the Palestinian question. Many of them say it privately. Many of them meet Israeli and American leaders and promise them all kinds of things against the Palestinians, as the Egyptian leaders are doing now, the Jordanians and so on, but they'll never say it publicly. It's unaccepted until now to go against the wishes of the Palestinian people. It's considered sacrilege among the Palestinian publics. This is the strongest point that the Palestinians have always had, and this is the point that Arafat, and now certainly Abbas, have never used well. They always dwelled on Palestinian sectarianism, that we are separate, that we decide on our own without going back to our, our crucible, our roots, the Arab nation. So I think there is a major issue, a major point of force for the Palestinians that has not been dwelled on.
Well, one has to point out that the Arab League countries have played a role in snubbing Hamas. I mean, they followed American orders not to recognize the legitimacy of Hamas.
Well, beyond that, the Egyptian regime, not just the PA and Ramallah, the Egyptian regime is fully complicit in the siege of Gaza. Fully complicit.
Yes.
It's part of the crime. And as I've written elsewhere, when our Nuremberg moment arrives, when we are strong enough to have war crime tribunals for Israeli war criminals, Egyptian leaders will stand in the same cage, just as American leaders will, and many of the European leaders as well. Complicity in crimes against humanity are crimes that are judged as crimes according to international law, and there's no escape from standing the judgment of international law.
Yes, would that we got there in my time, I hope. Any final thoughts, Omar? We're coming close to the end of this program.
Everything we've said so far sounds so bleak, so hopeless to an extent. I just want to leave on a positive note that on the other side, on the other hand, there's enormous civil struggle going on in Palestine, among Palestinians in exile, and among our supporters around the world. Boycott, divestment, and sanctions, or BDS, are among the most spreading campaigns in the Palestine Solidarity Committees everywhere, Palestine Solidarity Communities everywhere. And we are having some very positive results to account. So this is, it's not as hopeless as it sounds. We are achieving some victories here and there, and I think if we take that path of civil resistance, mainly civil resistance, like South Africa, we stand a lot to gain, especially in the international community and the grassroots level, not the official level, of course, but at the grassroots level. We're achieving major victories in Britain, in South Africa, in Ireland, even in Canada, in North America. So it's not as bleak as it sounds. There's a lot that can be done and is being done.
Thank you so much, Mr. Omar Barhoudi, for being our guest today. We would like to take this opportunity to wish you a very happy Eid al-Fitr.
Thank you, Sharif. Same to you.
Our pleasure, sir.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You have been listening to Mr. Omar Barhoudi, independent Palestinian political and cultural analyst, author, engineer, and organizer of the campaign for the academic and cultural boycott of Israel. And that is all we have for today. We wish our listeners a very happy Eid al-Fitr and look forward to having you with us next week, same time. This is Sharif Fahm signing off for now and reminding our listeners to get involved in the movement for a just peace in Palestine. Get involved. To quote Albert Einstein, the world is not dangerous because of those who do harm, but because of those who look at it without doing anything.